the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, it was a good week for the stock market. Unfortunately, it was not good for bonds. As stocks rallied, interest rates edged up slightly. Joining us on the program from Financial Sense Advisors is Rob Bernard. Rob, let's talk about what's going on in the macro environment. We've got the 10-year Treasury note is backing up towards 2.9%. You've got the 30-year bond a little over 3.1%. So let's talk about the macro environment and what is driving this, other than the fact that we know the Fed is raising interest rates.
Yes, that's correct, Jim. We're all pretty much going to get defensive on this. Just to put a few things into perspective, if you go around the world, we realize that Europe is still operating under 1.5% inflation. Their industrial production is starting to pick up. Japan, for that matter, they just had a Bank of Japan meeting, and they voted 8-1 to leave the 10-year note at 0%. Their short-term rate is 0.1%. And here in the United States, of course, we are, in effect, raising interest rates. Slow, but nonetheless, there's a lot of moving pieces in the economy right now, Jim.
You know, one of the things that the Fed's embarked on this several years ago, they raised interest rates 0.25% in 2015, another 0.25% 2016, three times last year. Rob, what is accounting for the big spike that we've seen in rates, especially if you go back to last September when we had the 10-year at 2%, and today we're talking at closer to 3%. So what's driving this? Let's talk about some of the bigger macro drivers outside just the Fed raising interest rates.
Wow, Jim, that's a really interesting question. I find it's mainly because we've got three players that have pulled back their purchases of U.S. treasuries, and that would be Japan, China, and our own treasury. You've got to think about it for a second and realize that we are now issuing more treasuries because of various reasons, our budget, the tax cuts that were announced. And then, of course, we have our own Federal Reserve that is unwinding years of quantitative easing.
You know what strikes me as rather interesting is you got three big buyers, Rob. You've got the Fed itself, you've got the Bank of Japan, and of course, China. So they're all pulling back. At the same time, the Fed is pulling back. It is raising interest rates, cutting back on the amount of treasuries. And I was reading somewhere next year, the deficit is going to be close to $1 trillion. So you have the Treasury coming to the market with more debt than we've seen. Probably you'd have to go back maybe 6 or 7 years when we were running trillion-dollar deficits. So let's talk about some of the macro factors. You know, it's just simple supply and demand. You've got more supply coming to the market as the Treasury needs to finance these deficits. And at the same time, you have your biggest buyers pulling back. I don't think, at least in my lifetime and working career, Rob, we've ever seen a Fed in a position where it's actually shrinking its balance sheet as it's attempting to do today.
That's exactly right. And what's more, one of the reasons why we saw the rate spike is because as the Treasury issues the amount of money that they're going to raise throughout the curve, all of the dealers that participate with the Treasury in their auctions, they in effect have to start dropping their own bids in order to make sure the Treasury's auctions are well received. So a week or so, maybe even earlier, you noticed the rates backing up. And then after the Treasury issued all its debt to the tune of maybe $250 billion or so of debt, the bond yields started to come back down again. This is the normal process that happens when the Treasury has to go issue debt.
And Rob, I wonder if you might explain for our listeners, when the Treasury comes to the market and you are a registered government bond dealer with the Treasury. So let's say like they recently came to the market with almost $250 billion in new issued debt, and you're a bond dealer, and let's just say you're one of the big ones, and you're supposed to take $50 billion. Explain that process of marking it down, because what you don't want to be doing is sitting on $50 billion worth of debt, and you can't unload it.
That's exactly right. I mean, basically, you said exactly what they do. If you want to be a dealer for the Federal Reserve in its full capacity, you have to make sure that you do your job best of absorbing the Treasury supply, and you have to figure out all the buyers that are already lined up for that recent auction. And you already know where the buyers will be players. If the buyers say, you know what, I'm only a player at a 295 for the 10-year, then you've got to make sure that you think that's where that bond's going to come. So you're going to drop the bids all around the rest of the Treasury market. And then, of course, the rest of the bond market's going to follow as well. And then absorb that supply that gets issued out. And then the market will seek its normal rate after the auctions.
You know, we've had 12 recessions since World War II, and 11 of those were preceded by Fed rate hikes, Rob. We all know in the end, they keep doing this until they break something. Usually it's the economy or it's in the markets itself. How do you know at this point, where some say we're midway through this cycle, that they plan to raise this year and maybe a couple times next year and get the Fed funds rate to 2.75%. How are we going to know along the way when they've gone too far? Because they were raising rates steadily from 2004 to 2007. But by the end of 2007, we were in a recession. They did the same thing in 1999 and in 2000, and we were in another recession. So how do we know whether the Fed is going to be too tight or it's too loose when it comes to monetary policy? Because at what point do we know that they're closer to breaking something in the market?
Well, nobody knows precisely when that's going to happen. There are a few things out there. You can tell when the Federal Reserve is starting to shrink the liquidity. The dividends on the S&P 500 sometimes are too low compared to what the 10-year can pay. And Chris Poplava has been working on a little black box that measures the amount of liquidity that's needed in these times of stresses. So a great example is back when we had our last big financial crash in 2008 and 2009, when the economy was under a great amount of stress. The Fed kept lowering rates and nothing actually happened. The economy still floundered. It wasn't until Bernanke initiated the quantitative easing did the economy, after several months, maybe half a year, started to move up a little bit. And it's equivalent to pushing on a string. And if you have monetary policy positive as well as fiscal policy positive, you can pull the demand, you can pull the economy forward. However, at the time, we didn't have any fiscal policy. We had mostly monetary policy. And it was very much akin to pushing on that string until Bernanke put so much liquidity in the system due to quantitative easing that it finally started moving. Well, Chris has devised this cool little graph that shows what's happening in the economy right now as we speak. And of course, we're nowhere near any types of stress or recessionary things, but we will know when that starts to come, meaning that we will know when the Fed is withdrawing too much liquidity out of the system. Because as you know, the stock market as well as corporate America thrive on liquidity. If the price of money becomes too expensive, then they can't expand anymore. If they can't expand anymore, the multiples can't expand anymore. And then their earnings start to fall. And then you have multiple compression. And then your next thing you know, you're selling off on the stock market. And the economy then basically breaks and the Fed has pricked the bubble. So we're a long way from that happening now. But clearly in 1987, interest rates went up to around 9% or so. People said, what am I doing in the S&P 500 earning 2% dividend when I can get almost 10% out of the Fed? And you had a big switch. Year 2000, the Federal Reserve pushed the rates up to 6 and change. People said, whoa, that money's getting too expensive. Next thing you know, people are looking around for interest because the stock market now is overvalued due to multiple expansion. Earnings start to fall and multiples compress. And next thing you know, the market is rolling over. 9 times out of 10, it's been caused by the Federal Reserve raising interest rates until something breaks.
I want to move on to something that impacts a lot of our listeners to this show, Rob, is we know that we're in the middle of a Fed rate raising cycle. And as you just talked about with the model there, we're not quite to the point where the Fed is overly tight and we're at risk of maybe going into a recession. Let's talk about what does this mean for, let's say, bond fund investors, because the vast majority of funds after the financial crisis in 2008 and 2009 by the public went into bond funds. So what is this doing to bond funds right now?
Well, over the last month, actually right around the first of the year, bonds were still in a positive mode. The yield on the Treasury 10-year was 2.25 or so. Then it spiked up with the fear from a very jubilant jobs report that we're going to enter inflation much sooner as opposed to later. And so consequently, the market sold off, the bond market sold off, and a lot of people that had ETFs and bonds, mutual funds and bonds, were very surprised on how far and how quick their bond holdings dropped. And at one point, a lot of bond fund managers were exiting, especially the active managers, were exiting their ETFs. And of course, when you exit an ETF, that has to be settled up before the end of the day. And so when there's more sellers and buyers in ETFs, that means the managers have to go directly to the bond market itself and sell bonds. So multiply that by thousands and thousands of orders going in, and you had a lot of stress on bonds. But if you were a single bond holder, yes, you realize that your bond went down a little bit, but you know the coupon that it was paying, you know the maturity date. You were okay. You can live through that. But the ETF guys and the mutual fund bond guys really got a good shellacking.
I wonder if you might explain the thing that really strikes me, and I think we saw this in the recent correction where we went down a little over 10% in 6 days, is, you know, I was reading a report about some of the big ETFs that were invested in junk bonds, and almost 10% of the entire amount of money that was in these high yield junk bonds exited. So, Rob, I wonder if you might address what this does for a manager. Let's say I'm managing $1 billion, and 10% of the accounting department comes to me and says, hey, you need to raise $100 million because we just got $100 million worth of liquidations. Let's talk about what that does to the bond fund manager and how you could actually get more losses because you're forced to sell something in a hurry in a market that may not be willing to take what you're selling unless they get a big discount.
That's correct. So let's use that same example. That fund manager now has got to go to all of his dealers in the market and say, I've got X number of these bonds, Y number of these bonds. I need liquidity now. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, if that dealer does not have a buyer on the other side, then he marks it down until he can find a buyer that's interested in picking up those positions. There was just those kind of things happening. And they can happen in stocks too, for that matter. But in this particular case you're talking about, that exact same thing happened. And so a lot of people in their ETFs and in their regular bond portfolios, they felt it the next day after those things are done.
It's not just ETFs, it's also bond funds. What do people do? Because, you know, there's a lot of money that's parked in 401ks that are in bond funds. And, you know, their only choices are bond funds. You can have an international bond fund. Maybe you might get a 401k that has a short-term or intermediate bond. What do, let's say, the average person working, putting money in a 401k, a 403b, or a 457 plan, what do they do in this kind of environment?
Good question. Most of these 401k plans, the sophisticated ones, usually have a fund called the Stable Value Fund. Usually, I'd say 99.9% of the time, there's no volatility in this fund. It's structured so to provide no volatility with a good interest rate. So from back in, you know, the 90s, when interest rates were higher, those stable value funds could have been paying 5%. Right now, the stable value funds are probably paying around 2%. And as interest rates go higher, the stable funds will be paying more as they go. So my clients that have 401ks, I give them the heads up, hey, let's look at your portfolio. And if you do have a stable value fund, think about moving some of your bond fund holdings, mutual funds in that particular case, or 401k, into the stable value fund because they will be more secure as far as volatility of principal.
Okay, well, let's talk about, we know that we're in the middle of a rate raising cycle, and we know that the Fed has indicated, and it's probably likely, they will raise interest rates again in the month of March. The futures market is saying they'll probably go again in June. A little less certain in terms of after we get beyond June. What do you do to prepare for a bond bear market? Because I think most of the people listening, Rob, may not remember what it was like in the late 70s, late 60s, in the early part of the 80s up to 1981, what a bond bear market looks like. Because at least when you and I got in the business, we used to call bonds certificates of confiscation. So how do you operate, or what does a bond investor do to navigate this kind of a market?
Well, first of all, they have to be aware that long duration is really going to be sensitive to rising interest rate environment. So, for example, you want to figure out a way to weather the inflationary cycle. First of all, you might consider shortening the duration of your existing holdings, meaning that if you've got bonds out there between 10 and 15, 18 year maturities, get rid of them, shorten them up. Take them down to 10 years or less maturities and always go for higher coupons. If you're sitting on 3% coupons, that's not good. You want to have 5% coupons or better, because if you're going to hold bonds through a cycle, what would you rather be getting, 3% on your money while you're waiting or 5% on your money? Now, a couple of things to take advantage of too. Floating rate bonds, laddered bonds, and just plain rolling 4 to 6 week T-bills.
Why don't we take each one of those? Why don't you explain for our listeners what a floating rate bond is? Because most people think of, you know, a bond pays a fixed interest rate and matures at a certain time. Explain the difference with the floating rate bond.
Most floating rate bonds started off as fixed rate bonds for a certain period of time, and then they float to the 3 month LIBOR plus a margin. So some of the bonds we have in our portfolios now are just doing that. They've already broken out into their floating rate situation. And for example, here's one that is BBB rated, which is investment grade. Currently, their margin rate is 3.7%. And the 3 month LIBOR right now is about 2%. So currently they're paying almost 5.7% rate of interest. And every 3 months, as the LIBOR rate keeps going up, their bond payment rate, the coupon rate, goes up as well. And so that is a very good way to participate. The bonds usually always will sell around par value because nobody wants to buy a bond that has a call provision, which most floating rates do, that can be called at any interest payment date with a 30-day warning. So in this particular case, this bond is trading at 5.7%. It's also possible to get a profit out of a floating rate bond. And what I mean by that is that you can buy the bond at a discount, say 97 cents on the dollar, because it hasn't floated fast enough yet in the upward direction. Its margin is a little slower, a little lower than other bonds. So it's not going to be trading near par yet because it's not equal to these other bonds that have higher margins. But as the interest rates continue to climb, it will catch up and the price of the bond will go from 97 cents on the dollar up to par value or a dollar. So it is possible to have a total return. Say the coupon's at 4% and your bond goes from 97 to par. You can pick up a nice handsome capital gain or a total return of about 6.5%.
Suppose you wanted something more predictable. Let's just say I'm retired and I rely on a certain amount of income coming in. Let's talk about a laddered bond portfolio. Let's say I don't want to mess with changing rates. I just want something that's predictable. And yet I do want to take advantage of, let's say, if rates begin to rise. Let's talk about a laddered bond portfolio and what that looks like and how it might work.
Sure. Laddered bond portfolio could work for municipals or corporates. And what that means is that you pick a date and time that you want your ladder to start. Let's say you want to start in 2 years and the top maturity date is 10 years. So you would buy bonds 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10 maturities. As the short end of your bond portfolio matures, you now have additional monies to put to the upper end of that portfolio, thus a ladder. So as money comes due, you have money available to invest at possibly higher rates. If not, you reinvest it at the same rate, and eventually you get all your money back. You know exactly what your income is, the coupons are, and your maturity date is.
All right. We know that when we're in a rate raising cycle, as we are now, the Fed is usually doing that to normalize monetary policy. And also, they're always worried about inflation. One popular strategy has been to use something like TIPS, which are Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. What about the idea of using TIPS?
That's sometimes a great way to play that inflation trade. However, at this point, it's a crowded trade. A lot of people have poured lots of money into that, and the premiums have expanded. So they're expensive in relation to other options. So what I do for my clients that want short-term treasury protected money, I will buy for them 4 to 6 week treasury bills. And what I find really fascinating is about 6 months ago, the rate of interest on a 4 week treasury bill was about 1%. I bought 4 week treasury bills today and my rate was 1.55. So you can do the same thing as a tip just by rolling forward 4 to 6 week treasury bills without any premium, and it's not a crowded trade. It's incredibly liquid. If you need to have liquidity on your treasuries, you can sell all of them or a piece of them, and that's the most efficient way to do an inflationary hedge on your treasuries.
So as I look at the possible strategies we have here, you mentioned a couple. One is floating interest rates, where as rates rise, your interest rate will rise on your bonds. Secondly, maybe a laddered bond portfolio, so you have bonds coming due over a period of time. And then you talked about rolling treasury bills. What about the idea of using a combination of all of those? Like, let's say you use your T-bills for short, you maybe have some laddered bonds and you mix it up with some floating rate bonds to take advantage of rising rates. What's wrong with, let's say, using all three approaches?
Nothing. That's a great way to diversify. Exactly, because your floating rate bonds are going to give you the highest rates right now. The laddered bond portfolio is going to give you a consistent rate, and the treasuries are going to provide you with liquidity and somewhat inflation protection, because as rates rise, because of inflation, you'll be able to roll those bills over in a 4 to 6 week pace. One thing that I should tell our listeners too is if they want more information about the floating rate bonds, that they can go to our website, financialsense.com, and look at my articles that I've posted on there on floating rate bonds. And then, Jim, there's one piece of information that all our listeners need to know about floating rate bonds. When interest rates have peaked, that's the time that you do not want to own floating rate bonds. Because just as the bond has peaked its rate of interest, so has the Federal Reserve. And so as the Federal Reserve then starts lowering interest rates, so will your interest rate on your bond go down as well. So a little bit of timing is necessary there. You want to be out of these bonds probably about 6 months to 9 months before you think the Federal Reserve is going to quit hiking rates, because then you'll get the best of it.
So in summary, Rob, investors who are invested in bond funds, they need to either shorten their maturities, start using, you know, things like treasury bills where they can protect their capital, but they don't want to stay invested in a long-term bond fund because they're going to lose money. Now, you talked about a couple strategies, floating rate bonds, laddered bonds, and T-bills. And then you also talked about a safe type of fund that you can use if you have a 401k plan. As we close, if our listeners would like to get in touch with you, Rob, tell them how they could do so, please.
Thanks, Jim. One other thing before we close. To all of our listeners out there that have mutual funds with bonds, whether they be municipals or corporates, short-term, long-term duration bonds, look deeply into the structure of your portfolio of that mutual fund and see what the fees are in there. For example, I just finished analyzing a prospective client's portfolio and found out that not only had his income declined over the past year by 6%, but he was also paying 60 basis points to the mutual fund managers. So it was a double whammy. Whereas, of course, if you have your own bond portfolio laddered or floating, it's a much better way to participate in holding bonds. So, Jim, if the listeners want to contact me and possibly talk about a custom-tailored portfolio, they can contact me at rob.bernard@financialsense.com. Or, Jim, they can contact me direct, 800-486-3939.
All right, Rob. Well, listen, thanks for joining us on the program, and come back and talk to us again.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Have a great weekend.
That concludes my interview with Rob Bernard. I hope you picked up some key points there. One of them on the macro front, we've got three big buyers of treasuries, the Fed, Bank of China, and the Bank of Japan, pulling back on their purchases, which is why you're starting to see rates rise. At the same time, you've got the Treasury, now that the U.S. is facing trillion-dollar deficits, coming in with more supply. So we all know when you have less demand and more supply, the price drops. And that means the dropping in the value of your bond funds. So do take defensive action, because we're going to be in this and the Fed's going to continue to raise, which means if you stay where you are, you're going to lose more money. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.